From the land-grant university in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 28th day of July 2008. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel. He's the senior grains analyst at Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois. And later in this half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with the folks at the Andersons right here in Champaign County. In agricultural news, low-interest money is on its way to the flood-ravaged areas of the Midwest, and there's a new alliance for abundant food and energy. It includes companies like ADM, Monsanto, and John Deere. I'll have more on these and other stories later in the program. Do you know the history of corn? Today we'll start a four-part series that traces how the monocot came to the Midwest and hybridized. Hey, don't forget that in just 26 minutes, we'll check in with the folks at Chesapeake Energy to discuss the global agricultural weather forecast. It all happens on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report. The Closing Market Report is a production of WILL, public radio from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Stuart Peterson. For over 20 years, Stuart Peterson has helped farmers manage both marketing opportunities and risks through their analysis, advice, and action. Stuart Peterson, confidence like never before. More information is available at www.stuart-peterson.com.
Checking the numbers as they settled in Chicago on a Monday afternoon. Futures like this in the wheat pit. Soft red settled the September contract nearby at 797 and three quarters, down 13 and one quarter. December 821 and three quarters, down 12 and three quarters. And March wheat futures at 843 and three quarters, 11 and one quarter lower. In Kansas City, the September contract settled at 824 and a half for the hard red winter wheat, 7 3/4 lower. Back in Chicago, where corn settled the September contract at $5.82, up 4 3/4 on the afternoon. December at 6.01 1/4, up 4 3/4. And March corn, 6.20 3/4, 4 3/4 higher. May futures at 6.33, up a nickel on the afternoon. August soybean futures, $14.25, 1 1/2 higher. September at 13.96 1/4, up 7 3/4. And November soybean futures at $13.96, up 9.5 cents. January futures $14.13 1/4, up 9 1/4. August bean meal $1.10 higher today at $3.75.80. August bean oil futures at $59.30, up 13 cents. August live cattle futures $97.75, down 75 cents. August feeders at 111.15, down 60. And the August lean hog futures settled 78.55, down a nickel on the afternoon. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. Here's what the outside markets are doing at this hour. Nearby crude oil futures are trading the September contract at $124.80, $1.54 higher at the hour. October at $124.95, up $1.13. August ethanol futures at $2.47 6/10, up 9 7/10. The natural gas trading at $9.14 8/10, up 6 4/10. The RBOB gasoline at $3.06 4/10, 3 1/10 higher. And the heating oil, that's diesel fuel, August contract there as well, $3.55 8/10, up 3 5/10 for the day. August propane futures trading now 3 7/10 cent lower at $1.77 5/10. And the nearby July gold futures at $927.60 an ounce are a dollar higher on the afternoon. Dow Jones Industrial Average now trading at 111 or at 11,185. That's just about 185 points lower. And the U.S. dollar is at 72.69, down 0.16 on the afternoon. The CRB index at 413.63 is up 1.41. Here's what Ed Kieser says the forecast for the two-state region looks like tonight. In northwestern and west central Illinois, says Ed, mostly cloudy skies, a few scattered showers, some thunderstorms too. Elsewhere, partly to mostly cloudy, lows will range from 65 in northeastern and east central Indiana to 73 in southwestern Illinois. Tomorrow, says Ed, in the north, mostly cloudy skies, some scattered showers, a few thunderstorms. Elsewhere, a mix of clouds, hazy sunshine, very warm tomorrow. Humid as well. A few scattered showers and thunderstorms will be possible, of course. Highs will range tomorrow from 86 near Lake Michigan to 96 in southwestern Illinois.
The closing market report is made possible in part by a grant from Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois, a full-service commodities firm with two toll-free lines. In Illinois, 800-252-2013. In Indiana, 800-637-3123. Or email to cooley@admworld.com.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from the University of Illinois. We're joined on this Monday afternoon by Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities, where he serves as their senior grains analyst, to take a look at the futures markets in Chicago. Good afternoon to you, Kurt.
Good afternoon, Todd.
I've been out of the loop for just 1 week, spending a little time with the family. And it appears the corn market continued on from where I last saw it, which meant it went lower last week and sharply lower at that. How did things trade over the weekend?
Well, we tried to build a base there middle of last week. Wednesday, we had a big lower opening, almost limit losses, and we came back, closed almost unchanged. And last Thursday, Friday stabilized a little higher than last night we built on those gains. Momentum indicators moved into deep oversold territory there last week. Then also, too, the downward price spiral we saw got close to downside price objectives on the analysts was looking for. Then, too, on the technical side, we saw the market enter sort of this 8 to 10 week time window where a cycle low was due. So ideas are the market was oversold and due for an upward correction. Fundamentally, we saw some export business come forward. We've been seeing a steady stream of 100 to 150,000 tons about every other day being announced of end users, exporters coming forward and gather some coverage. Then lastly, too, the longer range forecast, especially for that southwest, starting to be a little bit of a concern with a little warmer, drier conditions, what the trades really want to see, Todd.
The rainfall, of course, to this point has either been too abundant or adequate, I suppose, and the crop seems to be in awfully good condition. What are your expectations for this afternoon's reports from USDA?
This afternoon, as a nation, we're expected to see a 1% to 2% improvement. As you mentioned there's portions of Iowa and Missouri still just getting bombarded with too much rain. Those areas probably won't pan out to show much improvement. The higher ground looks pretty good, but the lower ground continues to struggle. Of course, the south and southwest will probably deteriorate some. We'll see how the USDA averages that all out. But for the most part, when there is quite a bit of rain, conditions do improve.
Well, the bottom line, I suppose, is that the United States needs to raise a pretty decent crop in order to feed both the ethanol industry, the export market, and as well as the domestic usage and feed industries. Are we going to put enough crop in the bin this year at this point? And what is enough? Is $12 billion enough? $11.7 enough? Where do we stand?
Well, with this price rise, we feel we've probably rationed the supply here and sort of slowed demand down somewhat. We'll have a better idea what the USDA is looking here on number-wise and on the August crop report here. So we feel that, overall production is probably not up to trade expectations, but yet demand has slowed enough that we're probably in a situation now where the trade seems somewhat comfortable unless we'd see some further deterioration in the production numbers here. The other thing to remember, though, is the U.S. dollar. So far, these countries have enjoyed a cheaper U.S. dollar, made our grain a lot more competitive on the world market, especially when you looked at soybeans. Soybean basis has screamed to the upside due to the slowdown out of the southern hemisphere as far as reliability getting those beans out of there. But, two, we've been cheaper than the southern hemisphere as you ship that off the Pacific Northwest. So demand and weather are both going to continue to be a key factor here as we move through the rest of the growing season.
Tell me a bit about the wheat market.
Well, wheat saw a pretty good bounce there late last week. News of Iran coming into the world wheat market. Also, too, this afternoon, not only are we going to be looking for improvement in the corn and bean conditions, but we're probably going to see maybe a little deterioration in the spring wheat areas. We've seen extremely hot, dry weather in some of those areas. in too wet weather in the other part of the area, so spring wheat conditions are expected to rot away. Today, though, we saw the wheat market close lower, but this afternoon we've seen the announcement that Egypt could be in for the world wheat market, as they are probably going to take advantage of this little pullback we've seen, too.
The hogs, while having some losses today, are still up on the top end of their range.
Yeah, we got back up towards the upper end of the range. If you got a chance, pull up a hog chart. It's quite interesting. We get up these levels, then we break real hard for about a month, then we turn right around and rally back up. You talk about a big, broad trading range. That's been quite interesting. But overall, there's some talk now with the upper end that pork prices could back off due to maybe a little bit of slowing demand here over the near term.
And then in the cattle, if you take a look at that, it looks like they're trading into a narrowing pennant almost.
Yeah, the technical picture on cattle is quite interesting. The overall thing in the October fats is that they do get down to this 102 area. We feel that's going to be some fairly good value. We look for exports to remain strong on the cattle as we go into 2009. The overall cattle inventory report didn't really show any big surprises there, so we feel that overall big demand is going to support the whole livestock sector over the next year and a half.
We appreciate you taking your time this afternoon.
Very good.
Kurt Kimmel is with Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, where he serves as their senior grains analyst and talks us through the futures markets here each and every Monday on the Closing Market Report. Your agricultural news is up next.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Risk Management Commodities, with offices in Chalmers and Lafayette, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities provides commodities analysis and recommendations for business and agriculture throughout East Central Illinois and Western Indiana. 866-837-9027.
In today's agricultural news, USDA Secretary Ed Schaefer has announced the availability of $390 million for natural disaster recovery assistance. That funding was included in a $162 billion supplemental spending bill that helps Midwestern states ravaged by recent floods. It also includes $140 million in funding for the EWP projects from earlier natural disasters like tornadoes and wildfires. Speaking of the Secretary of Agriculture, while farm groups and the Natural Wildlife Federation were satisfied with last week's ruling regarding the critical feed use component of the CRP, that's the Conservation Reserve Program, the Secretary says he was a little bit disappointed.
Yeah, on one hand, we were able to prevail and get some acreage with hay and grazing, but on the other hand, we were disappointed that we couldn't fully implement the program as per the well-thought-out and good plan we thought we had.
That's U.S. Ag Secretary Ed Schaefer, who has another CRP-related decision to make, whether to allow farmers out of their CRP contracts early without penalty. At this point, he says the critical feed use ruling is not anticipated to be a factor in the upcoming decision. Schaefer says USDA currently is working through the issues that will factor into the early out decision.
Certainly the environmental impact. We want to make sure that acres that are coming out of CRP, if they were to do so early, are those acres that are productive, that would make some sense to get back into the yield supply. So we're assessing what land is in, how long the contracts are. Is there a time period when more contracts with productive land are in? The later contracts seem to be, more environmentally sensitive. So we're looking at the kind of profile of the acres out there. We are having to deal with our Office of Management and Budget, OMB, because they're looking, if you do an early out without penalties, well then that's got a financial impact. So they're very concerned.
Other players include the Council on Environmental Quality, the Vice President's Office, and President Bush. And the bottom line, Schaefer says, is USDA is receiving a lot of input and wants to ensure all of the facts are at the table before making a CRP decision. Well, U.S. agribusiness companies are joining forces to promote the idea that the American agricultural industry can meet food and energy needs. Archer Daniels Midland, Monsanto, DuPont, John Deere, and the Renewable Fuels Association have formed the Alliance for Abundant Food and Energy. The group will not only tout how the use of new technologies can ensure renewable fuels don't cut into the food supply, but will also work to protect government subsidies for ethanol production. Alliance Executive Director Mark Kornblau says it's important for policy leaders to think about how the U.S. can grow its way to a solution. With greater support for innovation, he says farmers and ranchers can produce enough to supply the growing demand for food and fuel. And finally today, the new country of origin labeling laws will go into effect September the 30th of this year. To help retailers and suppliers understand how to comply, the American Meat Institute, Food Marketing Institute, and United Fresh Produce Associations will present a series of workshops next month. USDA experts who have written the regulations will address attendees and answer questions. Participants will also have the opportunity to talk with industry legal and business experts about compliance and supply chain efficiency. The workshops are scheduled for August 12th, 13th, and 14th in Baltimore, Chicago, and San Jose. For more information and to register, you can visit www.meetami.com. That's meetami.com. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It's a production of WILL from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois, public radio for the farming world. I'm your host, U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. You know, corn as we know it today is a relatively young crop, that in comparison, of course, to the age of the world. All this week, we'll report the history of corn with retired corn breeder Forrest Troyer. Troyer spent 7 years researching and writing about his favorite crop. Today, we'll explore where corn was domesticated and how it came to the United States. Corn was first domesticated in Mexico between 4,500 and 7,000 years ago along the 18th parallel. It was flint corn. Somewhere around 1,000 BC, retired corn breeder Forrest Troyer says this early corn was moved into the area we now know as New Mexico and Arizona.
And then the dent corn came in after Columbus, probably Cortez, when he went to Tampa Bay, when he went to Tampa Bay, probably brought the first dent corn to the United States.
The critical thing about these two moves was that the corn, flint and dent, had to be adapted to longer days and cooler, shorter seasons. Now, dent has also been developed in Mexico, but much later than flint, probably about 1500 BC, says Troyer. So flint corn came into the southwestern part of the United States, and dent corn traveled much later into the eastern U.S. Dent corn was superior to flint in almost every respect. The kernels were larger and the yields were greater. Soon enough, European settlers in the New World recognized the two different kinds of corn were related and could be crossed.
And the flints were the source of earlier maturity that was needed, and the dents were the source of higher yield and also better feeding traits. So some number of people in Virginia and in Tennessee and Kentucky crossed flint by dents to develop varieties.
Generally, says Troyer, it is estimated that by the time most of the United States had been settled in the 1840s, about 250 different varieties of dent/flint crosses had been developed. The Corn Belt at that time still hadn't made its way northward. The prime growing states were Virginia, Kentucky, and Tennessee.
And the reason for that is that the land grants from the Revolutionary War from Virginia, the state of Virginia, and also the land grants that were issued to veterans of the Mexican War were virtually all in that area. There was a small area in southern Ohio on the Scioto River, but there were two areas in Tennessee and there's two areas in Kentucky, and of course the corn in Virginia was already there. I mean, you know that they had already worked with it before the movement west started.
It is the combination of what American Indians did in bringing flint corn north into the U.S. and what European settlers did with dent corn on the East Coast that has resulted in the hybrids grown today by farmers in the new Corn Belt, Nebraska, Iowa, Missouri, Illinois, Indiana, and Ohio. As farmers settled those states, they brought the 250 Dent Flint crosses northwestward with them. Those open pollinated crosses, the Dent Flint combinations, were quickly adapted to the growing conditions of the Midwest. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programs are made possible by First Midwest Bank, serving Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Doug Slayton in Galesburg at 309-341-5003. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
You're listening to the Closing Mark Report from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. Joining us now to take a look at the cash grain market is Wyatt Muse of the Andersons right here in Champaign County. Good afternoon to you, Wyatt.
Afternoon, and welcome back.
Well, thank you very much. I had a good week off, but we probably ought to talk about basis and what it's been doing and whether it's been following the market down or getting stronger.
Well, it's a tale of multiple commodities here. The wheat basis continues to remain pressured, even in the face of the harvest sell-off. Soybean basis on the cash side remains strong, trying to pull it out of the farm bins and also out of commercial bins. As we get later in the season and this harvest approaches, looks like we're going to see some tightness in the soybean supply, especially at your processors. Cash corn basis is fairly steady. There's been very little movement since the board has had its massive sell-off, at least coming off the farm, and now it's just a carry game with carry into harvest. Wouldn't anticipate a lot of elevator selling unless we have a need to make more space for the new crop.
I suppose at least two of the three of those are pretty called for. The basis for corn would seem like there's enough corn around for it to remain fairly steady and following the marketplace. For the soybeans, looks like a tight supply. USDA has been predicting a tight supply as we head into the new harvest, and that should make the basis tighten up a bit. How about the wheat market? Has it been traveling in the direction you thought it would?
Yes, I think wheat basis is one that keeps everyone guessing all the time. It was anticipated that it would go wider into harvest, and there's just not a lot of demand for the added production we saw here in Illinois. As I've mentioned before, Illinois saw a 52% increase in the acres, and yields came in to be pretty decent this year, and people want to have space for corn this fall, especially as the crop starts to shape up, and looks like we're going to see some bushels come in the door, so people want to make sure they're positioned on the elevator side, considering the mills are not adding production on the wheat side, and the river market does not seem very strong for export wheat.
You say bushels coming in the door. Is that pre-sales or expectations for over the scale selling?
Oh, I think we're going to see some of both. I mean, elevators have a good feeling about what they've got purchased, bought over the last year to year and a half, and then as the crop conditions improve, and we've seen corn pretty well make it through pollination in a lot of fields in East Central Illinois, it's starting to feel like we're going to see some corn, at least what's standing out there, come off. As long as we don't have too early of a frost, I think we're on our way to a fairly decent harvest.
Okay, anything else we should add before I let you go for the day?
Not today.
All right, and your bids?
Cash corn, 544, cash soybeans, 1405, and the cash wheat, 613.
Thank you very much.
Have a good one.
That's Wyatt Muse. He's with the Andersons right here in Champaign County. Somebody from that grain elevator joins us on the Closing Mark Report. He happens each and every Monday afternoon. If you'd like to hear what they had to say or any of our analysts, you can listen to them again anytime you'd like on the World Wide Web at www.willag.org. That's willag.org. In 2 minutes, we'll take a look at the agricultural weather forecast.
It's National Milk Chocolate Day, as well as National Cheesecake Day and National Drive-Thru Day. By the way, drive-thru service initially became popular in the restaurant industry in the late 1940s. In-N-Out Burger claims to have built the first drive-thru restaurant in 1948. On this day in agricultural history in 1586, it's claimed that the potato was introduced to England by Sir Thomas Harriot. In 1852, Andrew Jackson Downing died, an American horticulturalist. He was author of The Fruits and Fruit Trees of America. In 1866, the metric system was authorized to standardize weights and measures in the U.S. In 1900, one of the many claims to the origin of the hamburger is that Louis Lessing first served hamburgers on a bun in his diner in New Haven, Connecticut. And in 1907, Earl S. Tupper was born. In the 1930s, Tupper invented a flexible, lightweight material that was used to make plastic gas masks during World War II. After the war, he turned his attention to consumer products, and Tupperware was born. At first, the food storage containers were a flop, but sales ignited with the introduction of the Tupperware party. And that's this day in agricultural history.
I'm Todd Gleason. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. We're joined on this Monday afternoon to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast by Josh Darr of Chesapeake Energy in Chicago. Good afternoon to you, Josh.
Hey, Todd. How are you?
Oh, I'm very good. Thank you very much. I'll give you the thanks for the pretty decent weather that my family and I had last week while we were visiting Tampa and Florida, but I have to ask you a question,
yes.
And I don't know whether you'll know where this is. We weren't in Tampa. We were in the phosphate capital of the world in Florida, was the town that we stayed in. It's in the central part of the state. Do you know what it is?
Is it Arcadia?
No, it is not Arcadia. N, P, and K, nitrogen, phosphate, and potassium, phosphorus, all fertilizer ingredients. Phosphate, 75% of the phosphate that is developed for use in the United States comes from an area around Lakeland, which is about halfway between Orlando and Tampa, and the capital, of course, it's just south of Lakeland. It's a little town by the name of Mulberry.
So, okay.
I try to tie everything I do to agriculture, I guess.
And that's good information. I like that.
Yeah, I'm just a fount of worthless agricultural information sometimes. Speaking of fount of information, what can you tell us about the agricultural weather for the week?
Well, I'll tell you what, the nice weather you're seeing out there today and the moderate temperatures. The moderate temperatures will stay here across central Illinois for a good portion of the week, but actually, we have to reach back to Hurricane Dolly, which made landfall last Wednesday in the southern areas of Texas. That moisture is now streamed from Mexico through the desert southwest. It's currently situated across Kansas and northern Oklahoma. That will be joining a wave of low pressure moving across the northern Midwest here and will bring rainfall Wednesday and into Thursday across a good portion of the Midwest, spanning from Iowa and Missouri, where, quite frankly, they don't need more rain after the rainfall totals this past week. But then across over Champaign, Urbana, and then further east into the Midwest. So it gets wet area here middle this week. After that, we actually go into northwest flow, and things look like they dry out in the precip for kind of 6 to 10 days out, thinking like late this weekend through the middle of next week, further north, Minnesota, northern Iowa, far northern Illinois into Wisconsin. And so the Midwest dries out during the middle of next week, and we look for maybe a little bit of above normal temperature trend during that period.
It's been, since we've stopped the deluge of rainfall, at least, it's been pretty decent growing conditions across a good portion of the Midwest.
Yeah, I think you're definitely starting to catch up on some growing degree days here, and that's, I guess, with the damage was done earlier in the season here, and now maybe it's a catch-up game of late pollination here, and then same kind of trend of later development for beans as well. And the race probably comes against a frost here, and how early is a frost? And it's a little too early to start talking specifics about that, but that's probably the next big milestone that people may be starting to look at for the corn crop, at least here, if we get through next week unscathed with any heat.
Anything else to add before I let you go for the day?
The plains are just baking, and same with the Delta, and there's definitely issues with beans in the Delta, and plains livestock is hurting with these 100-plus temps last weekend into this week.
We'll check in again with you in a week.
Thanks.
Thanks much. That's Josh Darr. He's with Chesapeake Energy in Chicago, Illinois. Somebody from that office joins us here in the Closing Mark Report on Monday afternoons. If you'd like to hear him again, you can do that at willag.org. You have a good afternoon. Stay safe. I'm Todd Gleason.